Welcome into Late Night Baseball. A lot going on this week, and we have a lot to dive into. We're going to talk about the Red Sox doing some surprising things against the Yankees over this past weekend. We have some MLB debuts. What the hell is going on with the Astros, and are they going to win the whole darn AL West again? And then Parker and I are going to give our All-Star ballots for the 2025 All-Star game in Atlanta at Truist Park. Parker, how are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I had a really good time this past weekend watching baseball. Sox are rolling back into another Yankee series this weekend with the Yankees coming into Fenway Park. So that ought to be super fun. I don't know, man. Baseball's like we're finally hitting that point where like all-star voting's happening. You kind of know what you're looking at from teams, but then like interesting call-ups are going on. So like really feel in the thick of baseball to a degree that we really haven't felt. At least I haven't felt up until this past week. So super excited. How are you?
I'm well. The call-up thing's an interesting point. I'll be honest with you. This morning when I woke up, this is like such a lame thing to admit to. I woke up and the first thing I thought about this morning was, are more players getting called up like at this time this year than ever before? Because I swear I don't remember this many call-ups to this degree. And then I thought, well, is it because our respective teams are calling up their players and it's just we're seeing it through our lens, but it just seems like there's more than there's ever been.
Yeah, I think that has to do actually more with the fact that they more clearly defined what was going on with service time and if that's going to be manipulated and how it's been manipulated in the past. Mm-hmm. Right now, we are past the point where anybody who gets called up as a rookie, you would have to have an absolutely nuclear season at this point to get called up today and win Rookie of the Year. And we're also past the point in time where this would count as a year of service time. So there's a lot of teams finally making the call up to a point where, okay, even though, like, for instance, the Red Sox called up Roman Anthony, fully do not expect him to win the Rookie of the Year unless he goes absolutely crazy over the end of the season. But we are past the point in time where this would technically count as a year of service time. So it is, I think that this is just the time. It's like the magic date. We used to see a lot of call-ups at the beginning of the season after the service time manipulation date. And then we'd see a lot in the back half of the season when the 40-man roster expansion. Now both of those things are gone. So the only thing we're really worried about is the Rookie of the Year odds. And right around now is, I think, when times are where teams are just super okay with, like, all right, if they win Rookie of the Year, it's because they got called up and they were absolutely insane.
Well, Parker, you had a good weekend. I'm not going to lie. You know, you came in here last week and you were like, yeah the White Sox, the Red Sox are going to get swept. This isn't going to go well, right? Like, you were like, you were prepared for it. But for them to take 2 of 3 from the Yankees at their house and score
pretty
digit runs. Yeah, double-digit runs on both days. I mean, where the hell was this team? Like, wait, why? Like, I guess showing up when it mattered against the Yanks, I guess. I don't know.
So my thing is, like, this was an ultimate proof of concept series, I think, for the Red Sox, because up until this point in the season, they have been not great. They've been the most errors in baseball, so defensively terrible. But the offense has been top 5 in baseball basically the whole season. But they, what they've done and the reason that they've been so bad in the standings is because they've lost so many one run games. They've lost 17 one run games. And not to be the guy that's like, oh, if you don't lose those games, like, I'm not going to say you put 17 more wins in the win column. But if you win half those games, you find a way to win half those games or even a third of those games, then we're talking about a division where we have a very heated, you know, race for first place. So I don't think that the Red Sox necessarily have played bad enough baseball that they actually are a fourth place team. I truly do not believe that. I don't think they're a fourth place team. I don't think they'll finish in fourth place. I just think that they've really been screwed in the margins and by lack of experience and winning baseball and how to move a runner over and lift the ball to score a runner from third base and things like that. That finally it kind of all, like, you'll have series where it all just kind of clicks and you do pretty well against pretty good pitching. And that kind of happened against the Yankees and again, actually, in this series that they just played against the Rays. So I think we're seeing a better brand of baseball so far for the Red Sox over the last week. And who knows, maybe they're getting hot and maybe this turns into an interesting race. But I'm not ready to count them out. I kind of was last week. I was riding pretty low. But after that Yankee series, you see how things can kind of break your way. And if we start getting really good pitching performances out of the guys that we've seen in the last week, like Lucas Giolito, put up seven innings. Walker Buehler put up seven innings. Brian Bayo put up seven innings. Like all the last three starters for the Red Sox put up seven innings, gives your bullpen time to breathe. Now I think is where you start looking like, oh, okay, maybe the Red Sox are good enough to kind of not count out yet. Maybe not count them in, but definitely don't count them out.
Well, and it depends on the reinforcements they're getting, right? I think, you know, Roman Anthony's huge. I know you've been dying for him to come up for a while now, so albeit he's not off to the best start, even though it's only been, what, 3 games, 13 plate appearances. But what do you make of him so far with the at-bats that he's putting up?
They are very professional at-bats. So he didn't necessarily like his first game, he went hitless. Okay, cool. So he struck out, but he also hit a rocket 110 miles an hour off the leg of the pitcher, like right up the middle. So, okay, cool. Solid contact. I'll take that every day. You know, it's a hit 80% of the time. And then he laced a double and up, like went the other way on 95 miles an hour for a 2-run double in his first plate appearance in his second game. The first game that his parents actually attended. So like we saw the same thing with Marcelo Meyer. First game, whirlwind of a call up, really quick time turnaround on the call up. Didn't like he wore number 48 for his first game and is now going to continue the season by wearing number 19. They didn't even have a jersey ready for this guy. So very whirlwind call up. He's the number one prospect in baseball. His family couldn't even make it out for his first game. And then he kind of settles in, gets himself a knock in the second game, a good knock, a knock that was, you know, the winning runs. And I really think that we're going to see a pretty good, you know, stretch of baseball from Roman Anthony here moving forward. We've seen it already with Marcelo Meyer. He had a rough couple games to start, and he just hit 2 home runs the other day. So I don't know. I'm worried that this isn't a permanent call up because this is a Willier Abreu IL stint, and the outfield is very packed at Fenway Park right now. So we'll see how long he's actually in the big leagues. But I am happy with what I've seen so far. Just happy to see him up at the big leagues. Know that this guy is a major leaguer, and the team's not actually just stashing him in AAA.
I mean, yeah, but I mean. It would be, with the season they're having, it'd be quite disappointing for this to be a short stint for him, right? I mean, it's not like he hasn't been putting up good numbers in the minors this year. He had a 146 WRC plus this year in AAA. Last season, over two different levels, he was batting 291. So, I mean, I could really, if I were the Red Sox, I'm thinking, let's keep Roman up here. Let's use your idea from last week. Let's trade an outfielder, which I think is an inevitability at this point.
Yeah.
And just make the move and keep Anthony up here because he's the type of guy. And I was thinking about this the other day. They can't screw this up. And what I mean by that is this cannot be Mookie Betts 2.0.
No.
They need to invest in this guy. They need to make him a cornerstone of that team immediately. Like, if you're going to pay anyone, you know, bring out the real wheelbarrow and pay this guy, it's got to be Roman Anthony. It just has to be.
Yeah, no, I think you back up the Brinks truck for this guy. I genuinely believe Roman Anthony's ceiling is Hall of Famer. And, you know, I think his floor is like 3-time All-Star. So,
yeah.
This is the kind of guy that you definitely want on your team for the long term. They already showed the fact that they're willing to extend people. They just extended Christian Campbell. They just extended Garrett Crochet. They extended Seidan Rafaela last year. So, like, this is – they're kind of showing they're willing to do these early in the career extensions. I mean, that would be awesome. I also think that it's a sobering reality for a guy like Roman Anthony and his representation to see a guy like Tristan Casas, who everybody was super high on, watch go down with an injury for like the third straight season. It's like, man, maybe you do sign the early extension. So who knows? Maybe we see him extend him. I'm going to enjoy my 6 years of Roman Anthony, though, even if they don't. So I'm going to start banging that drum a lot more here in the next like 3 to 4 years. But for the first 3 to 4 years, I can't wait to see what he puts on the field.
It's exciting. There's a lot of young guys coming up that just have freaky stuff. One of them is we have a pitcher coming up with the Milwaukee Brewers, Jacob Mizorowski. He's a right-handed, 6'7" freaky right-hander that's pitching 100-mile-an-hour fastballs. I mean, this guy, this season in AAA, he had an almost 11.5 K per nine, 2.13 ERA, and they're going to slot him right into this Brewers rotation, and I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, anybody who plays a bunch of Diamond Dynasty and MLB The Show like me, you guys are very familiar with Jacob Mizorowski. He is a freaking awesome card that we used very recently. So, yeah, no, I'm excited. I hope he turns out to be everything the Brewers need him to be. They've needed some help in the starting pitching department, and we saw them trade for Quinn Priester earlier this season, and it just hasn't really quite worked out because Quinn Priester's kind of like a hard guy to put a ton of faith in. Maybe Jacob Mizorowski is. This isn't a Paul Skeens, but like Jacob Mizorowski could be a very good starting pitcher here moving forward. I could see him being a guy that's in the same. He has the same kind of electricity, I think, in his stuff as like a Dustin May or something like that. So it'd be very interesting to see what happens to him. I think maybe his ceiling would be around like whatever Hunter Green's ceiling is. I kind of put them in the same ballpark.
Yeah, I don't even know that I would cap it there. Like I'm not out of the gate saying he's comparable to Paul Skeens at all, but when you look at a guy with this sort of stuff and the K per nine that he puts up consistently, maybe like I wouldn't rule that out. I'm one of the things that I'm fascinated by, at least this season, when we talk about Paul Skeens is, you know, I look at guys like Mizorowski who come up and now we see these guys left and right, guys that are throwing 100 mile an hour, you know, out of the minors. Paul Skeens has not been hitting 100 this year. He took a kind of edge off his fastball. And there's a question there about like, is he committed to being the workhorse that he is? He's like the seven, eight inning starting pitcher that it almost disappeared from the league for the last 3 years. You've never seen anything like that, but he's back. So you start to wonder, like, at what point do these pitchers even come into the league and continue to not throw 100 miles an hour all the damn time to preserve their arm? And I think Jacob Mizorowski could maybe even follow the same path as Paul Skeens, albeit maybe not that high level, but pretty freaking close potentially.
Yeah, the stuff's there. The stuff's, yeah, on his best day, I think he's got comparable stuff to a Paul Skeens. You'd be comfortable if he was starting against Paul Skeens. How about that?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that this is a guy that will be very exciting to watch come up. He's one of those dudes that, like, ooh, he's going to have a really good early. You know what? It reminds me of, like, the Corbin Burns arc. I think he's going to be very good for the Brewers and probably hit free agency, and then we'll see what happens from there. So, no, excited to see Jacob Mizorowski, what he's able to put out there in terms of production, at least early on in his career, because sometimes you see these starting pitchers come up and they get shelled really early because big leaguers know, you know, they can hit big league stuff. And sometimes you see these starting pitchers come up and they absolutely shove and then the league adjusts. So I'm interested to see what exactly is going to happen with him.
Well, at the time of recording, as we sit here, he has made his MLB debut against the Cardinals there in Milwaukee. He went five innings. He went no hits in that five innings, four walks, though, and five Ks. So
yeah, four walks and five innings. That's kind of what you expect.
That's a rookie debut. That's right. A little crazy, but he'll reel it in.
He's not even populating on BREF right now, so.
Well, I mean, there we go.
Brand new.
He's brand spanking new, out of the womb. All right, so Parker, one thing before we get to kind of the two main things we wanted to get to tonight. Jazz Chisholm, what I admittingly did not hear much about this. I've been kind of disconnected, but you said something went on with Jazz Chisholm this past week. Tell us about it.
Yeah, Jazz Chisholm, the Yankees are playing the Royals. There's a little bit of history that happened during the playoffs, but what happened to this past couple days is Jazz Chisholm slid headfirst into third base. He was tagged by Michael Garcia playing third base. The ball popped out of Michael Garcia's mitt. Jazz Chisholm was safe. His helmet popped off. And as he stood up or was in the motion of standing up, kind of like took a knee and looked at the third base coach and very clearly lip sync said, if he tags me like that again, I'm going to slap the fuck out of him. Now, look, the tag wasn't that hard. I watched it. It wasn't that bad. Yes, helmet came off, but it was more a circumstance of like the motion and like kind of like brushing his helmet off than it was like a slam tag. Like it's third base, bang, bang, play. You're going to get a little bit of a bump. Nothing crazy, nothing that really stood out in video. Of course, I wasn't the guy getting the tag laid on me, but this has history. This little bit of animosity between Michael Garcia and Jazz Chisholm we saw in the playoffs this past postseason. Anthony Volpe laid a really hard tag, like with visibly hard tag on Michael Garcia, where he like kind of put an elbow into his neck or like a forearm into his neck while he was coming in the second base. Kind of got a little chippy, and then Jazz got involved. And so I think there's a little bit of like, not bad blood, but like a little bit of a chip on each other's shoulder regarding each other between these two players. And like Jazz left the game with a stiff neck, and it's like, and then immediately in the interview, they were like, hey man, how are you going to be good tomorrow? He's like, oh yeah, I'm going to be good tomorrow. So like, was it that big a deal? I don't know. It just seems like we're making a lot of drama about nothing, but it was kind of all over social media this past week. So I figured I'd throw it in the rundown. And I just, my thing with Jazz Chisholm is like, he hasn't been great. He's a very, like, he fits in very well in Yankee Stadium. He's that kind of like, he's a showman. He's a very exciting player to watch. And I think he fits really well in the pinstripes. But this season, the numbers, it's a 214 average, a 323 on base, and a 450 slug. 118 WRC plus. I don't know that Jazz Chisholm has the clout to be making comments like that. But like, I don't know. Seems weird to me to be doing something like that.
Yeah, it is weird. And it's one of those things where, you know, you have two guys that have a history, and all of a sudden anything that anyone says or does, a weird look, you know, anything really just goes 0 to 100. And it's just like ridiculous. Like, why would you know, it's probably not a big deal, but only because of the scenario. Now it is a big deal, and it's made a big deal. It's just dumb. It's just ridiculous.
A little bit of an update on his Fangraphs page. Jazz Chisholm was removed from Wednesday's contest against the Royals due to left groin tightness, not necessarily to a neck issue. I saw neck on Twitter somewhere, so I don't know.
Well, groin, no, day-to-day. I mean, he tagged him. It went from his neck down to his groin. You know, this shit that happens. It's just obvious.
I think he's literally got his panties in a twist. I think that might... yeah,
that'll do it. That'll do it.
Day-to-day next. With panty twists.
Parker, we need to talk about the Astros, because listen, we came into this season
into this season.
fair enough. And I will still, that's the hill I will die on. I came into this season and I still believe that eventually this Astros team would fall off. And I thought this would be the year that they would lose the magic, but they got a shot of something. I don't know what it is, but all of a sudden they are now leading the AL West. They're 37-30. They're four games ahead of the Angels, mind you, who are tied for second with the Mariners. Are they going to win the AL West again this year? Am I going to be proven wrong? Like, what the hell's going on?
One thing I think is very interesting about this Houston Astros team is we all were ready to write them off. We all were ready to say, okay, the whole core is gone. Bregman's gone. Tucker's gone. Correa's gone. Altuve's moving to left field. All they got is Yordan. It's time to, you know, burn it down. Jeremy Pena hasn't turned out to be the player that we thought he was going to be when he first came up and was World Series MVP. Like, it's kind of time to close the book on that Astros dominance. Well, what the Astros to me have proved, and what this run has proved, because right now the Astros are 7 games above 500, they are 6-4 in their last 10, and they are in first place in the AL West with the lowest run differential of any team that is leading a division. And I think that is an extremely important point to make, because I think what the Astros have is an advantage that very few other teams do, is that they understand how to play winning baseball. And I talked about this before when I was talking about the Red Sox. They've lost a lot of one-run games, and they lost a lot of games in the margins. And it was because, in my opinion, they have a lot of young guys on the team that were never taught how to move a runner over or just take the sacrifice fly, bunt a guy, you know, work a walk, just have a long battle at bat of 8-9 pitches, even if it ends in and out, like to get through that starting pitcher and get to the bullpen. But I think that the Astros understand that, because all of those players that were brought up through that system were brought up in clubhouses filled with veteran players that knew how to play winning baseball and were used to producing major league ready young talent, whether that's coaching staff, veteran players, what have you. This is a largely successful franchise over the last decade and a half, and I think what that leads to is what we're seeing right now, which is a whole that is greater than the sum of its parts, because these guys have clearly shown that at least in the AL West, which admittedly is the weakest division in Major League Baseball currently, they know how to play winning enough baseball to put themselves in a position to win. They're four games up. They're four games up in that division. In a division that includes a Mariners team that, like, I'm kind of waiting for everything to really come together and for them to really start stringing together some wins, because the rotation is starting to get healthy again, and the lineup has overperformed and hopefully will be supplemented. But still, yeah. We see the Astros stand alone, and they are four games into first place with a low run differential that, to me, just speaks to their ability to win games in the margins.
Well, and that's the way the game and these front offices are really building teams now. I mean, you go back 5-10 years, it was all about hitting your way to the playoffs and hitting your way to the World Series with some good pitching sprinkled in. I mean, you think some of the biggest, most successful teams over the last 5 or 10 years, they were excellent hitting teams that just crushed the hell out of you. That does not happen anymore. I use my White Sox as an example. Like last year, they're absolutely pitiful. They were terrible to watch. This year, they're not blowing anyone away, you know, with a great record or anything, but they're better games to watch. Why? Because they're getting the extra base, they're running, mm-hmm. they're hustling, they're playing good defense, they're winning when they can in the margins. They're not losing games 10-1. They're losing 6-5. 4-3, like they're actually in games more. You have guys like Chris Getz and a lot of these GMs that are coming up now, and maybe Dana Brown's one of them. You put him in this category there at the Astros, where it's all a numbers game. It's winning in the margins. It's doing little things right. And I love to see that that's a focus, because it seems to have gotten away from a lot of people that that's the foundation of winning and playing good baseball. And the Astros they needed to do this, because all those big bombers, all those big hitters, like you said, they're gone. And the only way they were going to continue to be successful is to approach it this way.
What do you think has been the key to success for Astros team? Like, kind of the constant on these Astros teams that we always talk about has been good for the last, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years.
Ooh, I mean,
for me, I think bullpen.
True. Definitely bullpen, especially later on in their run when their starters were not reliable, or at least would exactly. not go deep in games.
In recent years, a lot of injuries. For sure, it's been bullpen.
Yes. And I immediately think of, you look at, and I'm glad you brought this up, because it's good to think about it this way. You look at some of the successes on the Astros team this year, and one of the big highlights is Josh Hader's little mini resurgence, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, he absolutely has mattered last couple weeks, last month for these Astros. And even your point's valid also from a starting rotation standpoint, because still their rotation really isn't anything on paper to write home about. However, they're eighth in Major League Baseball in ERA. They're second in K per nine, and that's going to win you a lot of ball games.
Yeah, and one thing I want to point out, they are second in Major League Baseball in bullpen war, and they are all fifth in Major League Baseball in bullpen ERA. Mm. That's winning. That's how you win in the margins with low run differential, is right. a bullpen that can lock it down.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see if that's something sustainable. Like, this is where, for me, I'm holding out hope that they're going to crash and burn. I don't mean to be such a Astros hater, but statistically, okay, those older Astros teams, like I said, they could out-hit anybody. Like, if your pitcher's having a bad day and they weren't going 4 or 5 innings, which happened on occasion, they just put up 10, 12 runs, game over. That's not happening with these teams. I mean, yeah, they've had some good games here and there. You know, Jeremy Pena is hitting very, very well. The outfield is actually a productive outfield, believe it or not. But that's not going to happen with this team. So how long can an offense support a pitching staff that, as we get deeper into the year, is going to have some bumps and bruises and could kind of average out as far as how they're performing, kind of the numbers they're putting up. So check with me in August and let's see where we're at.
I'll give you a benchmark to look at now and to track throughout the year. Cause right now, cause as you say that, I think, wow, to put up that much war, cause one thing with bullpen is like, not a guaranteed amount of appearances, right? Like, some bullpens will pitch more innings than others. Right now, the Dodgers have almost 300 innings out of their bullpen. They're number one in baseball. But the Astros are number two in bullpen ERA and number 24 in bullpen innings, with only 227 and two-thirds innings pitched. So they're getting really good production out of a bullpen that they are in close to the bottom of the league in terms of reliance on innings from that bullpen, which I think is a spectacular formula if you want to use that bullpen to carry you throughout the rest of the season.
I love that. That's a great benchmark because guess what? If that number begins to creep up, then I get a little concerned, right? Because
yeah, I was looking just now, and the Red Sox are only 0.3 war behind the Astros in terms of bullpen war, but the Red Sox are fifth in bullpen innings. They have had a lot of innings come out of that bullpen.
I get worried about that. I get worried about that with any team that if your bullpen's just recording so many innings like that, once we get to like early August, dog days of summer, can they sustain that? We'll see.
We saw it last year. The Red Sox were one of the best teams in baseball going into the All-Star break, and the bullpen completely folded after the All-Star break, and now we're talking about a 500 team.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Wow, that's going to be something to follow. I don't know. We'll see. The AL West in general, though, like the Angels holding their own. Mariners, like you said, waiting
negative
for them to
51
just pop
differential.
Off.
Negative 50 run differential from a second place team in those Angels.
It's amazing to me. I don't understand how. I really don't understand how the hell they're doing it. I don't think that's sustainable whatsoever. Yeah. Like you said earlier, I think the Mariners. I'm waiting for them to go on a run. I think they can go, you know, 8-2 over 10 here soon. Do a couple of those, and you're in business. So
yeah,
I don't know. I think this is gonna look very different in a month.
I agree. I also think one thing I want to point out now that we're on the West. Rangers and A's in particular underperforming expectations. I think a lot of people, it was a trendy pick to have the Athletics kind of sneaking into a wild card position maybe by the end of the year. Maybe not by us, but by some people around baseball. And the A's currently 26-41, a .370 winning percentage and 12.5 games out. I think they're just kind of done. They're kicking the can down the road in terms of the season. And I think you see what happens when you play in a minor league ballpark. And what to me, this is like a cool little experiment for like the difference between big league hitters and fringe big league hitters, because I think the A's have a lot of fringe big league hitters, but teams with whole teams of real, true, proven big league hitters are going into that ballpark and just absolutely crushing the baseball.
Yeah, it must be nice when you have a little league ballpark. maybe not for you, at least. Maybe for other teams. Parker, I can't believe we're even talking about this right now. All-Star game, man. It's coming up next month in Truist Park. By the way, before we even get to All-Star ballot talk, have you been to Truist Park? Because I'm here to tell you, it's an all-timer. It is an amazing atmosphere.
I have not been, and I really, really want to go, man. I really want to go. Oh,
I mean, I got to tell you, I've been to, maybe 13, 14 ballparks, and this Truist Park, the way they built out that battery right there around the park, that little neighborhood park complex, it's beautiful. And going to a game there is a hell of an experience. I can only imagine what an All-Star game would be like. So super jealous that people are going to be in attendance for that.
I've been to 9 ballparks because I have actually a note where I keep track. I've been to 9 ballparks. Yeah. And 2 of them are no longer big league ballparks, Old Yankee Stadium and then Dolphins Stadium for the Marlins.
Wow. How about that?
Whew. Yeah.
Man, that's one I would love to go to in Miami there with the teal and the orange. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, it was I was really young. I don't barely remember it, but I do remember for some reason the Dolphins mascot was there that day too, and I saw him.
core memory. Yep. So All-Star ballots. What we're going to do, Parker, is I want us to go ahead and share with the people our All-Star ballots for this year. We're voting a little early, but voting is open of Major League Baseball and MLB.com. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through all of our positions. We're going to share our AL, NL. Of course, we've picked 3 outfielders in each league, but in this exercise, we went ahead and picked 2 starting pitchers for each league, 2 relief pitchers for each league. And I think what we should do is just go position by position and go AL and NL. And we won't talk about everyone in detail, folks, but we'll kind of highlight some of the more interesting picks. Parker, let's start with catcher. Who have you voted for catcher in the respective leagues?
So for the American League, I got Cal Raleigh, kind of the slam dunk pick. There are arguments, and you have someone else, so there are arguments I will give you for other people. I just love what I'm seeing from Cal Raleigh this year. his offensive statistics are incredible. He's playing really good defense like he normally does for a Mariners team that really just needed a bat to emerge, and emerge he has. And then for the NL, I've got the leader in WRC plus from the position. I got Will Smith, who's rocking a over 160 WRC plus from the catcher position. Will Smith, I don't know, is one of those guys that really, I think he just kind of gets overlooked because of the quality of the lineup he hits in. But Will Smith would be like a number three hitter for any other team if he was the catcher for that team. So love him. Big fan of Will Smith, big fan of Kyle Raleigh. Those are my two guys. Who you got?
Yeah, I'll say for the American League, I do have Alejandro Kirk. No doubt about it, Cal Raleigh's probably the guy, to be honest. But Alejandro Kirk, I think, is definitely making his way into the roster. And I'm going to be honest with you, the way I approached these ballots and the way I tend to approach All-Star ballots is, yeah, I'm looking at stats. That's primary. Secondary, though, is I like guys that are having kind of like comeback years, right? That are like, yeah. Oh, shit, this guy's like out of nowhere putting up a season. Those are guys I care about. And Alejandro Kirk is one of those guys. Like, he right now is batting .325. It's the highest average he's had other than in 2020 when he played 9 games in his inaugural season. Mm-hmm. And I mean, right now he's at 129 WRC plus, already has 2.4 WAR for a catcher, and yeah, a catcher in Toronto. I mean, come on, that's huge. That's something you can't really overlook. And then on the NL, I have a lesser known gentleman that many people, I'm sure, don't even know exist. His name is Hunter Goodman on the Rockies. Hunter Goodman right now, 11 home runs, batting .289, .333, .512 slugging. This is an example of one of those guys on the Rockies that, and we're going to talk about this here, mm-hmm, there's a couple guys on this Rockies team, as shitty as they are, that are actually putting up good seasons and could be interesting trade chips for them come July. There's a couple people on this list, and Hunter Goodman, definitely one of them.
Well, everybody knows Major League Baseball makes sure that there is one player from every single team represented at the All-Star game, and I don't have another Rocky. So you know what? Thank you for meeting the quota.
Well, you know, that's what I'm here for. I'm all about fairness.
I love what you said about resurgent years, because if we move on to first base, I got a guy in my AL spot that's having a resurgent year for sure.
Give it to me. Who do you got for first base in the AL?
It pains me to say, but I got Paul Goldschmidt, man. Paul, I really hoped at the beginning of the year that Tristan Casas would be starting at first base for the American League. Obviously, that didn't happen. And Paul Goldschmidt, torpedo bat and all, has been absolutely tearing it up for the Yankees. And I really didn't think that he would. Like, we all know Paul Goldschmidt, he won an MVP a few years back, but like, I don't think anybody really expected a season that includes a .312 average, .367 on base percentage, and a .457 slug for a WRC plus of 132. And he plays one, I won't even say, like, I think he's won a Gold Glove, if I'm not mistaken, but he plays a professional first base. Like, he is a good first baseman, solid defender over there at first base. And for a guy who bats right-handed, I don't know that there may not have been a better equipped right-handed bat to stick in with the short porch and right at Yankee Stadium, because he's so able to spray the ball all over the field and use the entire field to his advantage. So love me some Paul Goldschmidt. Super excited to see him, as much as I'm going to get to see him this year playing against the Red Sox. So good for him. He's having a good year. For the NL, I just think it's Pete Alonso. I think Pete Alonso is like tearing it up for that Mets team. I don't really have much. I'm not going to go super in depth on him, but I think Pete Alonso is my starting first baseman for the NL.
Man, I got to say, Goldschmidt is a good one. He's exactly what the Yankees needed. Like, they, for a while, were struggling on what they were going to do with first base, and they pulled a rabbit out of the hat with Goldschmidt on that one. So good pick, all in for Goldschmidt. But I'll tell you what, in the AL, I have a soft spot for this one gentleman, and it sucks that he's on a rival team of the White Sox, but I really like Vinny Pasquantino. I think
he's
fantastic. First off, cool dude, great dude, but he's having a really solid season for those Royals. He's .280, .110 weighted runs created plus, and that may not be anything that you're like, wow, you know, it's popping off the page or anything, but here's what I really like about Vinny. He is his situational hitting. I feel like every time he comes up with runners on, he is getting them in. He is coming in the big spots, and he's crushing balls that are, I mean, no joke. We're talking like 375 plus foot bombs. I mean, this guy really has a lot of pop, and it's only gotten better over the last four seasons he's been in the league. So I'm going Vinny. I think he gets his first All-Star nod this year.
Yeah, Vinny Bezquintino is one of my favorite players in the entire game. He's spectacular. I'm really happy that he's on your team for sure.
And then the NL for me, I was a little surprised by this. I went with Freddie Freeman. You're probably like, Anthony, why the hell would you be surprised by that? Here's why I'm surprised by this. I didn't realize how good he's actually doing. Like, this guy, this was under the radar for me. Like, I knew yeah. Freddie Freeman was going to have a solid season because it's Freddie freaking Freeman, but
175 WRC plus.
175. He's batting 347. Okay. Like, I was not expecting that out of Freddie Freeman this year. And I was like, why did I miss this? But this is a guy right now that I don't know that I would call it MVP numbers because the home runs aren't quite there. But if he were to hit some more bombs, I mean, he's going to have probably one of the better seasons he's ever had at age 35, Parker. That's something.
Yeah, for sure. 21 doubles already for Freddie Freeman, which means he's about on pace for, what, 30 going into the All-Star break? Almost a 60-double season. Yeah. First of all, he's never done that. He's never hit 60 doubles. The closest he came was 59 2 years ago for the Dodgers. So, yeah, if he has that, we're talking MVP for Freddie Freeman. If he keeps up a 175 WRC plus with 60 doubles-ish, so... Yeah, I'm 100% with you, dude. Like, Freddie Freeman's tearing it up. In fact, when we were talking, I was like, it's got to be Pete. And then I looked and I pulled up Freddie's numbers. I don't know if it's got to be Pete. Freddie Freeman definitely has a I mean, he'll be on the team. He's already one of the more popular players in MLB. We know Pete will be there for the home run derby. So at least both these guys will be wearing an all-star jersey at some point.
100%. Second base. Let's go to second base for you in the AL.
Yeah, so I've got Glaber, who's just having himself a hell of a season for the Tigers. I think a change of scenery was one of the things that this guy really, really needed going into this season. WRC plus is 125. He's just having himself a good old season, 272, 379, 391. And he's being a veteran presence on a Tigers team that is super just playing up above expectation. I think above expectations. A lot of people picked him to win the division, but I don't think they picked him to be the best team in the American League. So, yeah, I think Glaber is bringing a lot to that team, and he's going to go ahead and be my second baseman. I think you had the same. I think we actually have the same for both second base positions.
In this case, we do, and I want to add on Glaber. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I wrote off Glaber. I thought he was going to be a bust after quite a few struggles in New York. But, you know, I go back to Moneyball. Why do we love him?
Gets on base, man.
He gets on base, dude.
It's almost 400.
That is the difference for Glaber. His base on ball percentage went up. His K percentage went from 20.5 to 12.1. I don't remember a drop.
That is a crazy drop.
Substantial, and he's getting on base at a better clip. This is a resurgent Glaber, and I couldn't be happier for the guy because he proved everyone wrong, and I hope he can sustain it. I hope this isn't a lightning in a bottle for him.
272 would be his second best batting average ever. Third best. It's right up there with his best seasons. And when you factor in the fact that he is not striking out, he's getting on base the way that he is, we're looking at probably the best season Gleyber Torres has ever had.
100%. 100%. And then you're right. I mean, for the NL, I also went with Ketel Marte. I'm going to be honest. Ketel Marte, he's always been one of my favorites because you know who he reminds me of? He's like the Jose Ramirez of the National League. Like so underrated.
Yep. Switch hitter. Really good offensively. So he is three batting average points off from a 3.45 slash line. It's a 176 WRC plus. We just got done talking about Freddie Freeman. Now imagine this from a middle infielder. Ketel Marte definitely has come out swinging this year. Fun fact though, he only has six doubles.
That's surprising.
Six doubles so far this year, but it's 12 home runs. And I don't know. I'm a big fan of some Ketel Marte. You're not gonna have to justify that pick to me.
No, not a chance. This is actually his by a healthy margin, his best season as far as WRC plus go. His second best was last year at 151. And he's 176, which is pretty crazy at age 31.
Somebody signed that man to an extension. Oh, wait, they already did twice.
You got to love that, because you know how many teams do that? Zero other teams. Yeah, that's a really, really good couple solid second base picks there. Let's go to third base. This one, Parker, we also picked both of the same guys. Why don't you start us off with the AL?
Yeah, so you just mentioned him. Might as well give him his flowers. Jose Ramirez is my American League third baseman. I just don't think that there's much justification that needs to be done. Jose Ramirez is the best third baseman in baseball, I think. He's put up 3.2 WAR already this season, 160 WRC plus from both sides of the plate. Basically a 3.45 slash line with 331, 391, and 547 slug. He's doing more J-Ram shit this year, man, and he's just never going to slow down. He's on the best contract in baseball. He's like the ultimate team guy, power-speed combo. He's just the best. He's the best third baseman in baseball. I don't know what to tell you.
He is the best. And I'll be honest with you. If I say I'll be honest with you one more time, I need to, you know what you need to do?
It's the new 100%.
Yes, new 100%. Get a jar and just put, I'll do like a quarter in the jar thing if that's what it takes.
You know, we're doing shots every time you say 100. You say that.
Oh, yeah. Shots of Pepsi Zero. Am I right? all right. So, Jose Ramirez. The thing with Jose Ramirez is you mentioned his contract. I don't think people understand. He actually went to the market, he easily gets 35, 40 million minimum.
Yeah, like, he's got like Bregman times 8 years.
Yes. Like he gave the Guardians an absolute steal. And this guy, because he's on the Guardians, because he has the contract that he was, because he didn't go through free agency and we all tracked his free agency, he doesn't get the attention that he deserves. Again, an underrated player, but I would argue he is the most underrated, underappreciated player in baseball today.
I want to point out, too, that when Freddie Freeman is done with his contract, he will hit free agency at the age that Freddie Freeman currently is.
Oh, my God.
So he could get himself a nice little lucrative deal for the last few years. He could sign literally what Bregman just signed for the last few years of his career.
That's a really good point. Didn't even think about that, but that is true. That is true. On the NL side of things for third base, it's pretty clear cut. You and I both selected Manny Machado for third base. Manny Machado in his age 32 season, 10 home runs. He does, man. 10 home runs, 320 average, 153 WRC plus. I mean, this is a guy where, you know, you look at a guy like Manny Machado, you look at the size, you look at kind of how long he's been in the league. I mean, geez, this guy... I mean, he's been in the league for what, 13 seasons now? And you think he would regress eventually at age 32. But no, he looks like the Manny Machado of old, and he's doing it there in San Diego.
He's looking even better, man. He's got a walk percentage that is up there with his best seasons. It's a 2.3% increase in walk percentage this year, and he's also striking out less than he has basically since he was 23, 24, 25. So, yeah. It's more Manny Machado. What can you say? And he's also, fun fact, playing some of the best defense you're going to see at the third base position in modern baseball. So yeah, Manny Machado, starting third baseman for the National League. I think we both agree on that one. I am interested to see what you got on shortstop. Why don't you bat lead off on this one?
Yeah. So for shortstop,
We went 2 for 2 on this one too.
We went 2 for 2 on this one too. And I want to, when you talk about giving flowers, I really want to give flowers to a guy who seemingly came out of nowhere. And let me clarify that. Jacob Wilson of
my God.
Okay. When I say come out of nowhere, I mean, he was their top prospect, but when I say come out of nowhere, we weren't expecting this in
a runaway rookie of the year campaign so far.
Runaway. 366, 402 on base percentage, 520 slugging for a, here it is, folks, 162 weighted runs created plus in this guy's first full season with the Athletics. I mean, can I be honest with you here? I don't I didn't look at his profile and go like, hey, this is what I was going to get out of this guy. I wouldn't have drawn it up this way.
Not from a 6'2", 190 shortstop, you know? Like, this is kind of a guy. No. I don't know. It's something about it. You know what it was? It was the A's. I think that's what it was. I think if Justin Wilson was coming up in the if he was a Yankees prospect, dude, we would have been super high on this guy, right? I think we probably would have been more tracking on how good he is. But to his credit, he has come out and been just an absolute bright spot on that A's lineup. Good for him. Super excited. He's raking. He's playing good defense. And I really think that as a rookie, getting to start the All-Star game would be just the ultimate honor for him. I think he would tell you it would be the ultimate honor. And to put him above a guy like a Bobby Witt Jr., which I think is the first person you think of when you think of American League shortstops this year, especially with the year that Gunnar has had this year, I'm super, super excited to see like another young shortstop breaking into the league and just raking to the extent that he is.
Yeah, he's definitely been a fun watch. We had the same guy in the NL, Parker. Who do we have?
Yeah, we got Francisco Lindor. Francisco Lindor, another switch hitter. We like our switch hitters, I think.
Sure do.
on this podcast. But Francisco Lindor is also doing it. He's 282, 351, 485, 135 WRC plus. He's like kind of like the captain of this Mets team, no matter how much money Juan Soto makes. I think Lindor is like your leader. I was listening to Clem from Barstool was talking. Clem from Barstool was talking on the Baseball's Dead podcast about Francisco Lindor, what he means to this team. And at 31 years old, he's a guy who you talk to teammates and they've had like reporters talk to teammates about, you know, what he's like in the clubhouse. And apparently he's the kind of guy that like checks in with every player on the roster at least once per series. And he's a leader. And he truly had like what might have been an MVP season last year, if not for 50-50 from Shohei Ohtani. Like,
yeah,
Francisco Lindor is going to kind of be the shortstop in the NL until he's not.
Yeah. I mean, his recent track record has actually been quite interesting because, you know, he had those 30 plus home run seasons in Cleveland from 2017 to 2019, right before the pandemic. And then of course, after 2020, he was traded to the Mets, and he's always been solid with the Mets, but he's progressively gotten better the longer he's been with the Mets. And we're looking at kind of 2018 Francisco Lindor. I think we all were worried that once he had kind of a slightly down year in 2022, mind you, slightly down year, 26 homers, 98 RBIs, like calm, or 107 RBIs, calm down. But still, for him, we were like, ooh, is he going to kind of fall off here? Nope, not the case. Francisco Lindor is back and better than ever, and he's hitting switch. He's a switch hitter. And also, I want to pick a fight with you on the fact that you say we love switch hitters on this show, because I recall some person giving Ellie De La Cruz massive shit for hitting switch. So,
do you need me to pull up his splits? I'll pull up Ellie's splits right now. I haven't even looked at him this year. I'm willing to bet the guy can't hit fucking lefties.
So basically, if you're Francisco Lindor, you can hit switch. If you're not Francisco Lindor, get your ass to one side.
J-Rim, Francisco Lindor, Cattell, you guys keep hitting switch all you want. Ellie, just fucking hit from the left side, dude.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. All right, let's go to the outfield. This is where things get really fun, actually. So obviously the way the All-Star game works is if you play the outfield, you're going to play anywhere in the outfield in the All-Star game. That's how this shit works. So there's no rhyme or reason why we put people left, center, or right. So calm down, everybody. Let's start with left field. Who did you have in left field for the AL?
For my predictions, I do like to try to keep a little bit of positional integrity. Like you said, it's kind of up in the air. People are going to play wherever the fuck they're going to play. But for the American League, I got Stephen Kwan. I think just another solid season as Stephen Kwan. He's been one of the best contact hitters we've seen. Like almost since Ichiro, he's just super good at bat to ball. And he plays spectacular defense out in left field for the guards. And then in the NL, I love the breakout of James Wood. Big fan of what's going on with James Wood. He's like up there with O'Neill Cruz as far as like exit velos and stuff like that. He's just a big, tall dude who can bang the ball around a lot. Love seeing him play, and it's super exciting. So I won't spend a ton of time, but Stephen Kwan just kind of doing Stephen Kwan things, and then James Wood having a really exciting season.
Yeah, I love that. I am just going to skip over a little bit here because I also had James Wood. I just put him in right. And James Wood is, you know, you look at that Nationals team, and they've had a rough go of it in this rebuild. Things just haven't really come to pass for them. But one thing that has gone all sorts of right is James Wood. I mean, this guy is quite a showstopper with the bat, honestly. I mean, it's pretty impressive. 16 home runs so far. We haven't even reached the middle of the season. So this is a guy who can hit 32 plus bombs this year for the Nationals. Who was the last guy not named Bryce Harper to hit that many home runs with the Nationals? I don't even know. I mean,
Ryan Zimmerman,
right? I was just gonna say Ryan Zimmerman, Jason Worth, maybe. I don't even think Jason Worth. So I mean, it's a good thing they have going with James Wood. So that's who I had as well in the outfield for right field. But as far as my left fielders in the AL, can't go wrong with Riley Green this year. He has been a huge part of what the Tigers are pulling off in Detroit. 13 home runs, 279 average, 131 WRC plus. And this is a guy that we've talked about a lot on this show about being kind of this rising star. When we're talking about perennial MVP contenders in 2-3 years, Riley Green may just be that. He's always had the tools to be that, and this is just one step in that process for him.
Fourth big league season, only 24 years old. The best is yet to come from a guy who's already doing what he's doing this year. So, yeah, super excited for Riley Green. Great pick.
As far as the National League in left field, can we talk about Corbin Carroll, dude? Corbin Carroll, guys. has hit 19 home runs. He is on pace for 40-plus homers this season. If you're telling me 5-freaking-10 Corbin Carroll is hitting 40-plus homers for the Diamondbacks, what?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, super excited for him. He's one of my favorite guys in baseball. He's like that Jacoby Ellsbury type, but in that one crazy power season that Jacoby Ellsbury had, that's just Corbin Carroll every year.
Right.
Power speed guys are my favorite players in baseball, and we're going to get to that here in a second when we talk about center field, but I love Corbin Carroll. I love the pick. He was on my list, and then I like became super obsessed with positional integrity and decided I want to give James Wood some love. So
for reference, guys, last year, Corbin Carroll hit 22 home runs. He is at 19.
That's a down year, by the way. We were talking about how is Corbin Carroll kind of, was he faking it until last season?
Yeah.
And then now this year he's breaking back out.
That's right. All right. Center field. Here we go. Center field.
Need time on this one.
Okay. Give it to me. Center field.
Pete Crow Armstrong is my starting center fielder for the National League because he's my favorite player in baseball. 271 average, 305 on base percentage, and a 545 slugging percentage from your center fielder, playing the best defense in center field in all of baseball, if you ask me. If not, maybe second, because I genuinely do think that as much as he is a replacement level player, Sedan Rafael, I think, plays the best defense in center field. But it's a 136 WRC plus PCA. He's going to steal a shit ton of bags. He's going to strike out a lot. And we saw it last year in 123 games. It was 96 strikeouts. He's already up to 71 strikeouts this year. And that goes to show you, like, that's why the on-base percentage is only 305. But if he can get those strikeout numbers to tail down and he continues to have the power streak that he's had, he's already got 17 home runs this year, we could genuinely be talking MVP votes for Pete Crow Armstrong. And I think that that's his ceiling. I think he is an MVP caliber guy. I think he could win one later on in his career, especially because he's only 23 in his third big league season. So it is the year of Pete Crow Armstrong for me, or at least the first year of Pete Crow Armstrong, and I'm super excited about him. In the AL, I got Byron Buxton because he was the original kind of guy that's doing the PCA thing, the speed power guy. Love those speed power guys, and he has been absolutely on a tear this year. Love to see him healthy, and we've been talking for years about Byron Buxton and what he could do if he just stayed healthy. And you and I went 2-for-2 on these guys, so I'll give you your time to talk about both of them.
Wow. I mean, you really nailed it there. I mean, it is the year of PCA, honestly. I mean, one of the bigger reasons I'm obsessed with PCA is not only the sheer numbers he's putting up, but like he is the true five tool player. Yeah. And you don't see them anymore, right? Nope. I mean, they're few and far between. And he is a guy, when you look, you bring up the defense, which is stellar. He is in defensive run save, okay, via Fangraphs. He is sixth in baseball with 10 defensive runs saved. And he's tied with three others for 10, and only three others have 11. Adolis Garcia, Julio Rodriguez, Andy Pages of the Dodgers, okay? So he's in good company, and I would argue – no, I'm not even going to argue. Fact, not only is he – essentially second in defensive run saves, he's faster than all those guys. Okay. Mm-hmm. So give me him every mm-hmm. day of the week. So that's number one with Pete Crow Armstrong. Number two, Byron Buxton. Exactly what I was going to say. Listen, this is a guy that has just been a disappointment, not as a person, but just a disappointment because you want to see him on the field. And for him to already be in 51 games this year, you look at how many games he's been in the last 10 years. I'll read them off to you. 2018, 28 games. 19, 87 games. 2020, that doesn't count. 2021, 61 games. 2022, 92 games. And he's already in 51. This guy could put a really productive season together for the first time in a long time. Good for him. Good to see. Big Byron Buxton fan.
Yeah, you're not going to find a bigger Byron Buxton podcast than this one, man. We love him. So glad to see he's already at 51 games. Knocking on wood for him, because sometimes this is when the season breaks down for him, but... I mean, it's more of the same, and he's an all-star. So let's make him the starting center fielder.
Heck yeah. All right, let's wrap up outfielders. Right fielder, I gave you mine, James Wood, earlier, but go ahead and start us off for right field.
I'll start with the NL because we all know who the AL is. The NL for me is Kyle Tucker. He's been absolutely incredible since he went to Chicago. I think he's going to make $450 million this year. Not much to say about him other than he's really good. He's really fun to watch, and he's wearing batting gloves now, which is super interesting. And now we get to talk about Aaron Judge again. Aaron Judge, he's having like the best season in baseball. He's having one of the best seasons we've seen since Ted Williams hit 400. He is a freak of nature. He's a force of nature. He is going to be hitting with a green monster to hit up against this upcoming weekend. So maybe if you want to see some fireworks, go watch him. Aaron Judge is inevitable, and he is the starting right fielder for the American League. So, and maybe this is the time I get to do it. So happy to see him playing right field again, because
yes,
that's where yes. he belongs. You have Cody Correct. Bellinger playing center field now for the Yankees, and Judge gets to go back to his natural position where his range is perfectly built, where his arm can really shine in mm-hmm. right field. So super happy to see him. And you know what? Crazy. Put the guy back in his natural position. Look at his numbers. He gets to focus way less on his defense. He gets to focus on his offense. And this is what we get to see from him.
Man, I'm just shocked by this Aaron Judge season. And I want to put it in perspective for everybody. When you look at just his weighted runs created plus, this season, or let me say it this way, in his 62 home run season that we all remember, 206 weighted runs created plus. Guys, he's at 246.
Yeah, he's this so year, much guys. Better this year than he was that year.
Now, you may be wondering, well, where is that coming from? Well, the slugging's up from that year. The on-base percentage is, let me make sure I get it right, the on-base percentage is 60 points higher than it was in that 62 home run year, so he's getting on base more. No matter what happens from here on out, Parker, I think we're looking at the best single season performance in baseball history, honestly.
Yeah, certainly through the first 66 games. Certainly through the first 66 games. He is comfortably on pace to shatter his 62 home run record. He is yes. at 25 home runs through 66 games. He could hit 70 fucking home runs this year, man.
Could you imagine? Could you?
I hope I get to see wow. it. I hope so.
Man.
Because I was six the last time that happened.
Yeah. Yeah, we were youngins. That's for sure. Man.
Ooh, that he gave had me a 58 goosebumps. Home runs last year, man. We didn't even talk about it. We almost hit 60 last year.
No. Yeah, we totally skipped over it. A blip.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Dude, geez, man. He is a freak of nature in the most respectful way I could possibly say that. 5 point. He has had a season's worth of war in his first 66 games. 5.9 war.
He could stop playing baseball for the rest of the season and get paid better than 90% of ball players.
He just had,
based on war.
Could you imagine if somebody hit 25 home runs or 23 home runs in 2020? We'd be like, oh my God, imagine if this was 162. Well, yeah. He's doing it right now. He's done it so far, and we're seeing it happen.
Oh, wow. That's just magical stuff right there. All right, let's before we go to pitching, let's wrap it up with some DH, the DH in your lineups. Who do you got?
To me, I think this is pretty clear cut. We went 2 for 2 in this. I think Rafael Devers has just settled into the DH role for the Red Sox incredibly well. It took me until DH to put a member of the Boston Red Sox on this team. I deserve some praise for that. I appreciate your self-restraint. Give me my flowers. Thank you. But Rafael Devers, I think, has just been clear-cut the best DH in the American League this year. And it's super easy to just put Shohei Ohtani in the best DH for the National League because he has been. He's been incredible. And he's going to pitch this year, too. So can't wait to see that. But, yeah, Devers and Ohtani.
Yeah, nothing more to say there. I'm with you 100%. Starting pitching. All right, let's go to pitching here. This is a fun one, guys. Okay, so we each picked two starting pitchers per league. We each picked two relief pitchers per league. Let's start with the starters. Why don't we just start with our first pair of starters? Who did you pick?
Yeah, so I have, if I'm making sure, I think I only have, out of my four starters, I have one right-hander. One right-hander, yeah. Oh. So three lefties. I have, first of all, for the AL, I have Tarek Skubal, who is poised to just go ahead and recapture that AL Cy Young. But also my other AL starting pitcher is probably, I think, the only guy who has a chance to dethrone Tarek Skubal, and that's Garrett Crochet, who's been absolutely outstanding through his first however many starts it's been.
Excuse me. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you there. When you look at the four pitchers I selected, definitely Tarek Skubal for the AL, definitely Garrett Crochet for the AL. I did go with Paul Skenes in the NL for obvious reasons. Okay. I think that pick stands by itself. But I do want to talk about Logan Webb, your pick, and I want to talk about Mackenzie Gore. Logan Webb is, first off, we're big Logan Webb fans on this show because he's always the guy that's forgotten about, yet is the most consistent pitcher in the game year by year. Yep. And I mean, you can't go wrong with Logan Webb. I mean, this season, he 2.58 ERA. His FIPS 2.13, already has 2.8 WAR as a starter. This is a guy that, again, is just consistently putting up good numbers every year, and seemingly we forget about him. One thing he has been doing better than previous seasons is this year he's got his highest K per nine, and it's funny, Parker, because I recall that you and I talked about this early in the season when we were talking about previews. We talked about Logan Webb, and what did we say? We said, if only he can get his K per nine up, and sure enough, it is 3 points higher. Good for him.
Without looking, how old is Logan Webb?
He can't be 30 yet. 29?
He's 28. And if you'd asked me, I would have said 33.
Wow.
I thought he was older than he is, dude. We're going to see Logan Webb for a little while longer. And I am so excited about it because this guy is just one of the best pitchers in baseball every single year. And like you said, he's got his K per nine up. He is looking just like Logan Webb of old. And I want to make something very clear. So I was looking when I was trying to make my case on why the Astros are the way that they are and why they're winning games in the margins and how they're winning games in the margins. Because their run differential was so low, I immediately thought, well, they must be winning a lot of one run games. And I looked and they're winning more than the average team on one run games. But you know who's got the most wins in one-run games? The Giants. They have 17 wins in one-run games. And how do you make that happen? Great starting pitching that keeps you in games, situational hitting, and playing in one of the worst hitting ballparks in Major League Baseball. So that formula is there. It's going to be really cool because right now the Giants, who are overperforming, by the way, I had faith in Giants. You did not have faith in the Giants at the beginning of the season.
That's true. That's
the Giants currently are up one game in the wild card. So they're even one game up on the last wild card spot. So they are comfortably currently in a playoff position, only one game out of the division, largely on the back of guys like Logan Webb, especially Logan Webb. So I'm super excited. I think he's the NL starter currently as it stands for the All-Star game. And then, yeah, like you said, Mackenzie Gore, the other lefty, he is putting on a strikeout, particularly in the strikeout department. He is putting on a performance for the decade in terms of strikeout. Yes. Right now, his ERA is sitting at 2.88. It is absolutely nuts. I'm trying to see. This isn't BREF. I'm on Fangraphs right now, so the strikeouts are not like bolded for like the leaders. But I just want to point out one thing that really stuck out to me. Highest O swing rate of any year of his career at almost 35%. So when he throws the ball out of the zone, batters are swinging at those balls 35% of the time. So for every three out of the zone pitches, batters are swinging at one of them, which is an incredibly high rate and is going to generate lots of soft or no contact on those pitches. And that's just a recipe for success for a guy like Mackenzie Gore, who has some of the best stuff in baseball. So when you can induce swings on it, you're just going to see a lot of success. So congrats to him.
Yeah, he's got to get paid. He's going to get paid. He's an arb year after this year.
He's an arb year. And you know what else he is? He's a Juan Soto trade piece. And I love to see him panning out the way that he is. Because James Wood is breaking out. He's a draft piece for the Nationals. C.J. Abrams is who C.J. Abrams is. And I think he's going to be a very good big leaguer. And with Mackenzie Gore breaking out, now we're starting to see really the Nationals took a gamble by getting rid of Juan Soto and getting a haul back for him. And to me, that was one of the gutsiest front office moves in all of recent baseball history.
Yes.
And I think it's paying really big dividends for them right now. And I'm super excited to see it. Check back in like 3 years, see where the Nationals are at.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Last but not least, let's talk about our group of four relievers. Who do you want to talk about? Who you got?
I'm going to talk about Aroldis Chapman. He's one of my American League relievers. Aroldis Chapman has a 1.59 ERA, a 2.2 FIP. It is a 35.5% K percentage and an 8.2 walk percentage, which is down from his average of 12.4 walk percentage. We are truly in his age 37 season seeing vintage Aroldis Chapman. This guy is in a big way performing way better than we ever thought we would see from him this season. And I'm personally, as a Red Sox fan, benefiting from it and thereby giving respect to it. And for like, think about it. This is a closer who's performing at near top of league levels, and he's only making $10.7 million this year, which felt like an overpay at the beginning of the year, but it's looking like a deal now.
100%. It's something that the Red Sox are going to need right now. If they're going to pull off any wins, it's going to be,
or if they're going to get anything back for him later.
True. That's a good point. And a lot of these teams are going to be looking for pitching help as they do each and every trade deadline. And Aroldis Chapman, definitely high on that list, especially when you have Liam Hendricks right behind him, right?
Especially, like, think about it. How many 37-year-old closers that throw 104 miles an hour on the regular that are able to go out there three consecutive days, which he just did this past week?
Nobody. Just him.
Yeah, like, that's kind of a league of his own, and good for him. He's pitching like a much younger version of himself.
Yeah, that's a good one. I have two here for you. If you guys ever heard of Randy Rodriguez and Jake Bird, great. Me neither. Well, these two guys are actually putting up some numbers if you haven't heard of them. Randy Rodriguez is one of my picks for the NL. He's on the Giants right now. He's 25, number one, but he's pitched about 29 and a third innings. His K per nine rate's 13.19, and he's got a 0.61 ERA. This is only his second season in Major League Baseball. That's why you may not have heard of him, but he is someone who is absolutely lights out of the bullpen for the Giants. And then my other NL pick is Mr. Jake Bird. Jake Bird, his K percentage, 32.7% K percentage, 141 ERA, and he's also has a K per nine at about almost 12. So this is a guy who's coming in late in games for the Rockies getting strikeouts. This is interesting because we mentioned earlier that I had another guy for you from the Rockies, because the Rockies, as shitty as they have been, yep. You have guys like Hunter Goodman and Jake Bird that are kind of under the radar guys, and you need to know about them.
Yeah, no, exciting. The relief pitcher market, not market, the relief pitchers in the All-Star games are always super cool, because a lot of these guys are only ever going to see one if they see one at all, and it's all about whether they can piece together a good season. Did they have a single blow-up outing? It can ruin your entire All-Star campaign if you're a relief pitcher, and these type of things really get relief pitchers paid and keep them in the league for a while, because it shows what their ceiling truly is. Otherwise, it's a really meat grinder of a job to be in. So it's really cool to see some guys that are breaking out in the National League. I have Andres Munoz as my other AL reliever, and then I have Tanner Scott and Robert Suarez, just kind of some names that we're all really familiar with. Particularly Robert Suarez is having himself a really good year for the Padres, so super fun to see that. But I do want to give you a chance to talk a little bit about Josh Hader, because like you said, we're seeing more from Josh Hader this year than I think we kind of got accustomed to over the last few seasons, and it's nice to see a bit of a resurgence from a guy who's, like, when he's going, one of the nastiest lefties in all of baseball.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of mentioned him earlier, so I'm glad I did, because Josh Hader, when you look at what the Astros are doing, like we said, you know, a lot of it, or at least a big piece of it, is that Josh Hader is Josh Hader of old. I think we all were concerned last year when, in his first season with Houston, his ERA out of that closer spot was 3.80. I mean, that's rough. That is not what we expect from Josh Hader. I mean, we're used to a guy with like sub 1.5 ERAs the last couple seasons sprinkled in. So for him to be at 1.29 ERA again this season, still has that higher strikeout rate. It's good to see from Josh Hader. He is reestablished himself, or I guess reminding us that he is one of, if not the most dominant, closer in baseball today. Let's not forget what Josh Hader does when he gets on the mound. Very happy to see him with his resurgence, and I think he'll make it to Atlanta this year.
Yeah, he's already got 17 saves, which is half of what he had in a full season of work last year at 34, and we're not even at the break yet. So, yeah, his baseball savant page is a fucking bloodbath. It's awesome to see. So cool to see Josh Hader doing his thing.
Absolutely. That'll be it, folks. Those are our ballots. That's what we're going ahead submitting, you know, poking the little hole, hanging Chad, and we're going to mail it to the MLB offices. Old school. That's what we're doing.
All about it.
All about it. All right, Parker, last word tonight. What do you got? What's your last word?
Red Sox made a trade. Red Sox made a trade for Jorge Alcala. So we talked about how the Red Sox bullpen was severely overworked and how they have some of the most innings in baseball. And here's some reinforcement on that. Not that crazy of a move, but he does have a fastball that averages in 97. He is a righty. He was very, very good in 2024. He was a 3.24 ERA. He pitched in 54 games for 58 innings in 2024. And then now in 2025, he's had some struggles. Is an 8.8 ERA, but I think that Andrew Bailey is going to be able to hopefully work some magic and at least provide some innings in some places that we could, you know, use some low leverage arms in. And hopefully this looks like a move where it's like, the Red Sox just traded a prospect for a bullpen arm in mid June. Are they going for it? So it's like, hey, happy to see what's going on.
Well, call me when they trade that outfielder. Okay.
Great. Yeah. No, that's going to be a big move, I think.
All right, folks, my last word tonight. You know, last season was a struggle for the White Sox, and they have been playing better baseball. The games have been more entertaining. And you know why I think that is? I think at the end of the day, it's all about, you know, just going straight to the Lord Almighty. You know, Pope Leo is a White Sox fan, and he was seen in a White Sox hat the other day. And I just think we have, you know, just a direct connection to the big man upstairs, and it's all going to be all changed from here on out. You heard it here first. It's all changed. It's all different.
I mean, if there was a team that was going to be God's team, it definitely was the White Sox. I had that picked in my preseason rankings.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The White Sox are God's team. You heard it here first. All right, Parker. That was a fun one tonight. Thanks for doing that, as always. That was great. Folks, if you are not following us on YouTube, what are you doing? Because I have 145 people here that are lined up as subscribers, and you need to be one of them. So go ahead on YouTube, subscribe to what we're doing here. Make sure you're following us on socials as well, and we'll see you next week here on Late Night Baseball. Take care.